How long can we continue to ignore this rare privilege and still maintain it as a privilege? We already know regimentation and preferential government as none of our founding fathers ever intended that we should know it. Nor is it enough to say times are different. They are indeed, very largely because we have been more willing to send our sons and daughters to die on the battlefields of the world than we have been to rise up with the intelligence God gave us for a practical look at some of the insane ideas that have been slipped into our way of life by those whose prime concern is to see to it that the people of this country jump through hoops every time it is expeditious that they do so. The council of the greatest minds America has ever produced, morally, spiritually, and economically, continue to be ignored by the little men at the top of our time, whose ivory towers have been kept furnished fatly by the patient, obedient plodding of the American taxpayer. Read the Constitution of the United States. Its framers, faced with a day of turmoil and bewilderment not unlike the circumstance of this very hour, were able to weave for the country's future a fabric so reasonable, so honest, and so realistic as to unite the colonies of that day and create an outlook that was to become one of the most useful and productive in history. But not so today. Something has happened to the solid substance of the idea of a more perfect union. Domestic tranquility, the blessings of liberty to ourselves and posterity. In these first triumphant days, these premises were ripe for America because they were first in the hearts and the attitudes of those who were planning the country's tomorrow. These planners were not visionaries except as they looked forward to times when their work, the Constitution of the United States of America, would have to be even bigger than its authors if it was to stand the buffeting of those who would henceforth be irritated by its determination to block the dictates of schemers against the welfare. To be sure, it is difficult to say what is right for America, but it is far from hopeless if you will just remember the immortal admonition of Carlyle. Said he, "There are no hopeless situations. There are only men who have grown helpless about them." This points the finger at all of us, leaders and followers alike. And there must be no turning aside from the responsibilities implied. Daniel Webster met them with the spirit and personal dedication of this courageous outlook. "I was born in America. I live in America. I shall die in America. And I intend to perform the duties incumbent upon me in that character to the end of my career. I mean to do this with absolute disregard of personal consequences." Old-fashioned, you say? No, indeed not. Do you think for a single minute that the boy who left your neighborhood to become a GI in Korea asks for special consideration when the moment comes for him to fall in for the duty of his next assignment, even though it may mean giving his life? The answer is no, no, 1,000 times no. Is it right then that we should show less responsibility amid the relative comforts of home than our soldiers, sailors, and airmen have so willingly shown for so long a time? They have won the wars they have fought in our behalf because they deserve to win them. Here at home, we will win the battle for more sane and sensible government when we deserve to win it, and not until then. This is the year for an effort at home to match our supreme undertakings abroad. It must begin with such unity as we have not seen in years, if we are to be equal to the combined strength of the concentrations of power the opposition is setting against us. Those who would destroy this country are doing their utmost to divide and conquer. Their subtle tactics have infiltrated practically every segment of our society. Indeed, our enemies must be delighted beyond description as they watch this nation wallow in the midst of its vaunted strength. With iron hands, they have whipped their masses into line against us. In the face of this grim certainty, the time has come to ask ourselves, are we overworking our individualism and our personal determinations to assert our separate wills to the extent that we are giving comfort to the enemy while at the same time perhaps losing sight of the only objective that really matters, what is right for America. As complicated as it all appears to be and as impossible, the answer is actually as simple as this. We, the people of the United States, possessed of a new sense of solid Americanism, must move into the breach and with honest minds and earnest hearts meet the issues of this crucial year. The shallow thinking that goes with decision by prejudice, chance impression, or delusion must be left behind for the most realistic possible approach. Contrary to the views of many of our present leaders, we need to search out the truths the heroic champions of our great and successful past have left to our eternal guidance. This does not mean turning back or reversing our course, as some would imply. Thomas Jefferson may belong to the past, but these wise and wonderful words of his belong as well to this very hour. How little do my countrymen know what precious blessings they are in possession of, and which no other people on earth enjoy. National immortality can be ours, in the noblest and most gratifying sense, if every citizen will show an eagerness to act on the strength of Daniel Webster's, "Nothing will ruin the country if the people themselves will undertake its safety, and nothing can save it if they leave that safety in hands but their own." In our churches, by way of the public platform and deep in the hearts of most of us, the national conscience has been moved toward a vastly improved attitude. But we must not lack the moral courage to shoulder the very real personal obligations that are the key to a certain and positive perpetuation of the freedoms we have so long enjoyed and cherished. It is not enough that we know what is right for America. We must do what is right for America. To proceed otherwise will be to unwittingly or intentionally do what is wrong for America. Then how would we feel in the presence, perhaps, of the Statue of Liberty, whose greeting to the world still says, "Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses, yearning to breathe free, I lift up my lamp beside the golden door." Nor do we dare forget what we owe at the shrine that is the tomb of the unknown soldier. Here rests in honored glory, an American soldier known but to God. From the infinity of his ageless immortality, he looks down upon us tonight with questioning eyes and an aching heart. We are the ones who must now make reply. He and the legions who marched away with him have already written their imperishable answer to what is right for America. Timely still are these unforgettable words from Thomas Paine's description of an American crisis of an earlier day. These are the times that try men's souls. The summer soldier and the sunshine patriot will in this crisis shrink from the service of his country. But he that stands it now deserves the love and the thanks of man and woman. The men and women who follow us will be our children and our children's children. Let's make them proud of our answer, a Republican answer to what is right for America. Thank you.
That was the address of Governor Howard Pyle of Arizona. He titled it, "What is Right for America." You've heard his words, and now the delegations are standing, those that remain for the final address, and the music is playing, and the evening session for the second day is about to draw to a close. I've just been told there's a small fire. There was a small fire in a vent of this great convention hall tonight, but it's all been extinguished, and it's just a report that we're mentioning in passing. A small fire, and it was put out here at the hall tonight. Governor Howard Pyle is an interesting young man. He's only 44 years old, a slim figure, a former war correspondent, a radio news commentator. He's now, as well as governor, the program director of NBC's radio station KTAR at Phoenix, Arizona.